He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you as always. Glad everyone is with us on this Monday. We've got another couple of great interviews for you this week, starting with Reen Gibson today. First, I want to remind everyone to go follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Facebook is the 73rd Hole Podcast. Instagram is the 73rd Hole, and then Twitter is at the 73rd Hole. Just search 73rd Hole. You will find us wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. Go ahead and rate and subscribe. This podcast takes 2 seconds, would mean the world to us. So thanks for listening. Thanks for being with us today. And we hope you certainly enjoy this upcoming interview with Reen Gibson, who's on the line right now. We're excited to welcome him to the program. So Reen, glad you could join us today. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm kind of weird times right now, but glad I could be on with you guys.
It is very weird times right now. Kind of my first question, I was wondering, what are you doing during this quarantine? Where are you staying? How much golf have you been able to play?
Yeah, I've been pretty fortunate. My wife and I moved out to Oak Tree, where I play in practice, about a year ago. And fortunately, the courses are still open. So kind of getting out more or less every day and doing something, whether it's playing or practicing. So it's kind of been nice. I've never really had time off like this before, back-to-back weeks. I'm normally on the road for several weeks or several stints. So good to be home doing some practice and enjoying time with my wife and my dogs.
Yeah, that's something that, a lot of these players, like yourself, who are used to on the road traveling, are able to get back and spend some more time with their family, which I think is extremely beneficial, like you mentioned there, Reen. And, you've been on quite an incredible journey. You came to, we met first time, because you played at Oklahoma Christian for Coach David Lynn, just like I did myself. You were just a little bit before my time, but you were still around the program and helping out all of us players over there as well. So kind of go through your journey of how you ended up from Australia, where you grew up, to Oklahoma Christian. What got you there, and then kind of what propelled you to where you are now?
So basically I was in a position in Australia. I was a decent junior golfer. I wasn't necessarily a star like a Jason Day, who I grew up with, but there was either two avenues I thought I could pursue with golf. It was either stay in Australia and work my way to becoming a club pro, and then maybe give myself an opportunity to chase tour golf once I got that accreditation, or come to America and look at the golf scholarship, avenue. And, for me, my first goal was to get an education. I thought that was important, at least kind of a backbone of something you can have moving forward, whether golf did work out or didn't. So I had some friends previously from my hometown and other areas in Australia come to America on a scholarship. So I kind of looked up to them, and they helped me, along the path of pursuing an avenue over here. And fortunately, Coach Lynn came to the table with a fantastic scholarship offer, one I couldn't really turn down. And that's kind of what led me to get to OC here in Oklahoma City. I make the joke to people that, back then when I was looking at coming to college, we had to pull the Atlas out. We didn't have iPhones. We didn't have, that kind of technology. And I had to basically look up where Oklahoma was on the map. Wasn't really in a position to do college visits financially at that point. So took a chance. And obviously Coach Lynn took a chance on me as well. And
had you ever been to the States before then, Reen?
I'd been once. I think I was about 8 or 9. We just did a quick trip to LA, and fortunate to go to like Disneyland back then, but nothing with regard to college visits, or I didn't even think of it back then.
Nothing golf related, so you weren't used to the courses or anything like that, though.
Nothing. I just what I've heard through the grapevine and what the internet shows. Like I said, didn't know where Oklahoma was, didn't really know much about the school. It was kind of a big leap, but I just turned 18 and just finished high school, and packed my life up into 2 suitcases and head across the world. But very fortunate. Coach Lynn took me under his wing, and we had a good program. And here I am sitting here 16 years later, living, 5-6 miles from the school I went to.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, Oklahoma Christian does have a phenomenal golf program. So, Ryan, I'm just curious, you know, I'm sure you had expectations as an 18-year-old kid of coming over here, what it would be like, what school would be like, what golf would be like. The difference between expectations and reality, did reality exceed your expectations? Did it meet your expectations? Were you was school and or golf different than what you thought it would be? What was it actually like once you got over here?
First of all, like the schooling for me was a little different, a little more difficult, just because it was just somewhat different curriculum to what we did in Australia. Some of the general education classes I'd already taken in high school, so it was kind of a little mundane that way. But so my freshman, sophomore year were kind of a little boring that way. Like I'd just rather, you know, I did a finance degree and start finance classes from day one, and that's kind of how university works in Australia. So once I kind of got to those upper level classes, it was definitely more interesting and obviously harder. So I didn't really know, you know, those kind of American history classes. I didn't think I'd have to take those, you know, little stuff like that. And for an outsider coming to America and not knowing, you know, really any history of America, I mean, it was a hard class for me. You know, I had to learn basically your history in one semester. So it's kind of little stuff like that you kind of take for granted. You know, Bible classes, I didn't really grow up in a Christian family, so the Bible stuff was also difficult, stuff you just had to learn and read, whatnot, and stuff that, you know, people that grew up in that environment, you just kind of learn as you grow, whereas I had to, like, kind of fast-track it in one semester. But the golf is fantastic. The courses over here are great. I think Coach Lynn has a good setup with, you know, River Oaks and Oak Tree, and we had access to Gladia at some times or whatnot, so... the golf was great. We had a great golf program, great players. I think he developed a really good team and built a good team and, you know, a well-rounded team, some foreigners, some Americans, you know, that was good. So the golf definitely is better, I think, over here than Australia. We basically just played a lot of public courses in Australia, whereas the country club model over here, I think, is fantastic. So golf was good. School was good, just difficult. But I think, you know, expectations, I didn't really have any coming here. I didn't really know what to expect. And, you know, I'd rather have low expectations because whatever you come across is probably going to excite you rather than let you down. Yeah, so the way I could look at it.
You know, guys over here, I don't know a lot about Australian golf. I was born and raised in Oklahoma. I know a lot about American golf. When I think Australian golf, I think Royal Melbourne. I think, you know, this is incredible. It's awesome. What is actual day-to-day golf like? You know, you said a lot of public courses and things like that. How few and far between are the elite courses like Royal Melbourne, and what's the caliber of course you were usually playing in Australia?
Yeah, so I guess the best way to explain that would be, you know, the biggest, like we're a small country, we're 24 million people. You go to the biggest cities, there'll be some nice clubs. You go to Sydney, you go to Melbourne, you go to Brisbane. There'll be, you know, a handful of really nice high-end private clubs like your Royal Melbourne, like your Kingston Heath, Kionga over in Adelaide, Royal Adelaide. You know, just difficult to get access to those courses. Where I grew up was just a small town and we had one golf course. I grew up in a town called Lismore and we had Lismore Golf Club. It was just a little public golf course that anyone could access. You know, membership there is $500 for the year. You know, so it's more accessible down there. But you just don't have the amount of courses like we do here in America. We don't have the country club set up because we just don't have the amount of people to really support that. Private golf in Australia is just very, very limited to the bigger cities because that's where the bigger populations are and obviously people with a bit more money. So, you know, we just grew up on tiny municipal courses like a Kicking Bird equivalent here, you know, and every kind of little small town would have a course and, you know, you may drive 20 minutes down the road to play the next one or an hour down the road to play the next one. So that's kind of all we were kind of really available to get at until we went to the bigger cities and maybe had events on more of the private stuff. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense there, Ryan, as a matter of fact. And, you know, one thing that, you know, you were a tremendous college player. Were you a four-time All-American or three-time All-American? You were, I mean,
yeah,
it seemed like every year you were four-time,
yep.
Four-time, absolutely. So So you came in almost day one and just, you know, were lighting the world on fire. And, you know, one thing I really appreciate about OC, especially when I was there, you know, it's, you know, like you're from Australia and we had, you know, some great friends and players, you know, from like Norway, Sweden, England. I'm sure I'm leaving out a few in there as well. So What do you think about, you know, maybe just the program or what, you know, Coach Lynn and, you know, Kelsey Klein was there as well. And you've had a little, he wasn't coaching when you were there, but you had a little bit of interaction with him. You know, what do you think about the school or the program was able to let, you know, like for me, you know, if I moved an hour away and it felt like I was homesick, you know, let alone going halfway across the world like you guys were doing. So, you know, what about the setting and all that allowed y'all to have success?
Yeah, I think a lot of the foreign players were kind of in the same situation, you know, and they kind of, whether it was golf, whether it was tennis, which that program was still there at my time, you know, a lot of the foreigners just, they had a lot of relatable, you know, things going on. So we used to hang out all together all the time. So I think that was like a good little, you know, group of people that you could rely on. We're all in the same position of being in a different country and experiencing different things. And, you know, OC was very good across all sports, I think, in having foreign students. So there was always a good group of, whether it was 30, 40, 50, 60, you know, foreign athletes at any time at OC. So I think that was good. That was like its own little community, like I said. But I think Coach Lynn built a very good program. And I think, you know, when I first came to school, it was Will Still NAI. And I think Coach had a little in with, you know, being able to recruit some of these foreign players that maybe weren't eligible through the NCAA clearinghouse to go Division One or two, didn't really have the money to afford, you know, say a 50% scholarship at a big D1 school. He was able to give them, you know, close to a full scholarship. So I think he was able to pick up some really good talent that, you know, were good enough for Division One, but, you know, weren't for some factors able to go. So, and I think that's what led to a really good program that he was able to build. And, you know, I think, you know, outside players saw the success he was having, like local school players like yourself, you know, you're an hour away and you saw how good the program was. And I think that was a good testament to what Coach has done, you know, recruiting foreign players and also local players.
Absolutely. And Coach Lynn, he had actually sent me over a couple of tidbits and kind of stories between, you know, about your college career and some of the other success you had. And one story he mentioned that I wanted to ask you about, see if you remembered. He said that your very first round of qualifying that you guys had when you were a freshman, I believe y'all were playing River Oaks and you were 8-under through 12 or 13, something like that. And another freshman that you came with looked over and asked you what your lowest score was.
He did, yeah. That's a funny story. I'd never seen River Oaks before, and obviously have a bit of history at that place. But So I was playing pretty well. Like I said, course I'd never seen before, and I think I was rooming with him maybe my freshman year. His name was Jordan, and he looked at me and I was playing good, and I was like, "Oh, you're playing really good. You're 8-under. Like, what's your lowest score?" And I just like kind of like iced the kicker, you know. I didn't even think I was 8-under, and that's kind of, you know, what leads me to some of the low rounds that I've shot. I just try to play golf and, you know, think about the score afterwards. And I think I parred the last five holes coming in to shoot 8-under. It was just kind of a, you know, someone popped my balloon a little bit because I was just trying to go as low as I could.
So. Now, did you give him grief about asking you what your lowest score was mid-round?
I don't think I did. I didn't really bother me until I told that story to Coach Lynn, and he's like, "Are you kidding me? Like, you said that?" Because you should never
a
hot streak, you know?
No doubt. There's a list of unwritten rules in golf, and that's close to the top of them for sure. So I got a good laugh out of that. And like you said, you know, maybe it was maybe a good learning tool for you since it happened, you know, kind of young in your career, you know, so maybe you were able to kind of learn some experiences from that to, like you said, allow you to shoot some of those low rounds that you did.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like I said, I've always had the mindset of just playing individual holes. That's kind of how I was brought up. Just try to play every hole the same, you know, with regards to mindset. Just play it as good as you can and add those 18 hole scores up at the end, and hopefully it adds up to a low one.
PGA Tour Pro Reen Gibson joining us here on the 73rd hole. And Reen, whenever you Google, I don't know if you've ever done this, but whenever you Google Reen Gibson, as I did this morning, the first three things that pop up, your PGA Tour profile, your Wikipedia page, and then the third thing is the ESPN story about the 55 that you shot at River Oaks. 55 is, I've played River Oaks. I'm a 4 or 5 handicap. I'm an okay player, not great. I've played River Oaks. it's kind of quirky. I could see how you could go low out there. I couldn't go low out there. I could see how you could, though. The day you shot 55, take us through the round, the reaction to it, all the pub that you got. I remember I turned on Golf Channel that night, and I saw Reen Gibson shoots 55 in Oklahoma City. And I texted Taylor, and I was like, Reen Gibson, is that like Reen Gibson? He's like, yep, that's him, 55. So the round itself and then the aftermath, all the publicity that you got for it, what was that like?
Yeah, it was kind of overwhelming. It's funny. I used to play River Oaks all the time. Obviously, it was one of my college home courses. And when I turned pro and graduated, that's where I played and practiced out of before I joined up here at Oaktree. But we used to have a really good group of players that played every Wednesday and Saturday. Could be anywhere from 4 to 12 of us. Jim Young, one of the teaching pros, he was part of that group. Ryan Munson, just some good members, good golfers around the city that were all members out there. And it was a Saturday morning round. We always had the first tee time Saturday morning. We always walked normally. And it was a weird morning. We'd had a bunch of rain, Thursday, Friday. It was cart trail only. It was kind of a little wet and muddy, so we all decided to walk. We normally use our push carts, but I decided to carry my bag just because I didn't want to push the cart through the mud. And so the driving range was closed. Got there about 10 minutes before the tee time, hit about 3 or 4 putts, went to the 10th tee, threw the balls up. There were 6 of us, so we had 2 groups of 3. And, I hit 3 or 4 iron down the 10th, hit a wedge on the 40 feet, 2 putted for par, thought nothing of it, just another round. Get on 11.
Real quick, let me interrupt just real quick.
Yeah.
You didn't hit range balls the day you shot 55.
No, the range was closed, so we just went straight to the tee.
Okay.
So, kind of thinned one down the middle on 10, managed to get on the green, 2 putt for 40 feet. Like I said, didn't think anything of it. Had literally just got a brand new driver in the mail like a day or two previous to that. It was a brand new Cleveland Classic, the kind of old, new school looking driver. Get on the 11th tee, hadn't hit it before, and I absolutely smoked this tee shot down the middle. Hit a 4-iron on the green, make eagle. So I was like, that kind of perked my interest. Then birdie 12, eagle 13, and then just kept making birdies. It was weird. After every hole, I just kept feeling more and more invincible. And the greens are perfect normally at River Oaks. That's one thing that normally they were known for back then. I haven't played in a while, but, you could really get it rolling on those greens. And, I birdied 14, I birdied 15, I birdied 16, I birdied 17, and then, I get on 18 with about a 12-footer, and I make it. And, by then, my playing partners were like, what's going on? And, made the putt on 18 to turn at 10-under, and Ryan, who I was playing with, came up and gave me a massive chest bump, and just he couldn't believe what he was seeing.
So what's par on that side? You were 10-under. Is par 35 on that side?
Oh, man, Taylor, you'd have to remind me.
I think it's 36 because it's par 71, I believe, and there's 3 par 3s on the front. So, yeah, I think it's 36 on the back.
Okay, so it would have been a 26 then on your first 9.
It was a 26. Yeah, I'm looking at the scorecard right now. Yeah, 26 on the back, 29 on the front. So you guys can attest to this. The first hole at River Oaks isn't necessarily the easiest tee shot in the world.
Oh my lord! It's like shooting up a hallway at up your closet. I mean, it looks so narrow. Driving range on the left, housing addition on the right. It's very intimidating tee shot, especially on a wet morning like that.
Yeah, so I've seen a lot of carnage there through my college years of 8s, 9s, 10s, 11s and qualifying. The first hole of the day. So we make the turn and we have to wait because they did a 2-tee start that morning. So we're waiting for about 10 or 15 minutes and I'm thinking, oh man.
That's got to put a little bit. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And at that point I was like, man, maybe I should just go home. I don't want to ruin this round by going to the front and hitting one out of bounds or something like that. So we wait and hit driver a little bit down the right side. It was fine. It was just, in the little trees that are down the right, so it stayed left of the cart path, so it was fine. So hit it on to about 40 feet again and 2 putts, didn't think anything of it. Hit it 8 or 9 iron on the next 30 feet, 2 putts. So I was like, back to a normal round. So then 33, which is par 5, and then 4, I hit this amazing, I think it was a 5 iron, and I hit this shot, and it was straight at the pin, and all of a sudden the ball disappeared. And we're like, oh my goodness, did that go in? Did that go in? So there's a group, the group up in front, we yell out, did it go in? And they're like, no, but we get up there and the ball had finished on the backside of the hole about an inch behind it. So the flag, from our point of view, we couldn't see the ball because the flag stick was in the way. And we kind of jokingly say that if that went in, probably no one would have believed this round. But so 34 and then 35. Now I'm 13 under. I'm thinking, wow, like I've never shot in the 50s before. So that was my goal. Kind of once I made the turn at 10, let's just make sure I can get to the house in the 50s. And, you know, once I got to 13, I was thinking, well, maybe I can, let's see how low I can really go. You know, and that was my thought. So I get on six, which is can be a round breaker with a round wrecker with a bad tee shot there, the par five with the hazard left and the house is right.
Another very narrow hole, very similar to one in that aspect.
Exactly. So I managed to hit a good tee shot there and have four iron in for my second to kind of a blind green. You know, there's water up there left and out of bounds right. Like I was saying earlier, kind of a wettish morning and unfortunately had some mud on my ball and hit this four iron, hit it good and look up and the ball is just going straight right. My heart's just sinking. And I was like, oh, man. So I was kind of praying, please stay in bounds. And so I hit a provisional. Luckily, went up there, and Ryan said it nicked a tree and stayed in. But I'm now up on that kind of top level and toughest chip. So get it down on the fringe and two putts. So make five there. So I'm a little disappointed. You know, that was definitely a birdie opportunity to get to 14. But, you know, I tell this to many people. I think that kind of lit a fire in me and spurred me on to say, hey, let's just try and birdie the last three holes. You know, rather than just cruise in. So hit a really good tee shot on seven, made birdie, you know, hit the 3 feet on eight, made birdie, and then got to nine and kind of flared one out towards the 18th with three wood and, had a shot, hit it under, you know, 12, 13 feet. And by then we had about probably 20 or 30 members that, had heard what was going on between Ryan's, you know, tweeting and shot by shot plays on messages and stuff. People heard what was going on and, they saw me roll in about a 12 to 15 foot putt across the slope. And, so yeah, they all went crazy. And, I guess it added up to 16 under. It was kind of one of those days that, you know, it's unfathomable to even think back on, but, you know, I could replay every shot in my head after that round, which was, it was pretty cool.
Did you at the time, Ren, or did anyone that was posting up or the posting the up to date, did they know that it was that 55 was the record, like the world record? Did they look it up to know, see what the lowest score ever was, or was that something that you found out after all that happened?
Yeah, it was all after. We got done and, you know, we're inside having a beer and, you know, just sitting around the table and one of the other guys in the six and looked it up. He's like, dude, this could actually be a thing, like, but you know, it's a record I've never even looked up or didn't even think was possible. So it wasn't until post round that we looked it up and saw that it could be a record. So we went down that route and we got it ratified with them. So kind of a cool little story to have, you know, something I can tell maybe my kids one day or something like that.
Yeah, so the round's over, and then it's ESPN, it's Golf Channel. You're seeing yourself all over the place, and people want to talk to you. What was the whole media scene after that like? You're now the guy who shot 55. You're not just Ren Gibson anymore. Ren Gibson? You're the guy who shot 55. So what was that like?
Yeah, it was different. Like, this was 2012. I turned pro in 2009, so at that point I'd really only been playing mini tour stuff. You know, a Monday qualifier here, you know, on a web. I may have got in. Nothing. You know, no one really knew my name at that point, but so you always have a lot of skeptics out there saying, "Did he really do it?" But I obviously know I did, and had the players to support me there. So yeah, it was pretty crazy. Something I've always said that, you know, I don't want it to define my career. You know, I felt like I've made some good strides since that, and obviously getting to the PGA Tour is the pinnacle. But yeah, just kind of a new experience I'd never had before with people. Some, I don't know how people managed to get my number, but they did. So I was fielding phone calls from everyone. So pretty crazy.
Yeah, that had to be a pretty overwhelming, but yet, you know, kind of a awesome experience too. And I want to try to paint the picture for the listeners out there. I did a little bit of my research kind of when all this was going on about the 55. And from what I saw, the only other, you know, any other score that could have been competitive was there was a 55 shot in like a par 70 course at some course down in South America on like a 5,400 yard course or something like that.
Yeah. So that was a guy by the name of Homero Blancos, I think, something like that. And when we we went down the route of getting it ratified. We saw that it was a 9-hole course, played twice. Like you said, it measured like 5,400 yards. So when we went through the process to get it ratified, there were some, classifications that the course had to meet. So it had to be like 6,500 yards or longer, you know, like a tournament course. So I guess that had changed since that original record had gone in the book is what we found out when we were getting it ratified.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, that guy played a 5,400-yard course in par 70 and was able to do it. You know, River Oaks, you know, kind of like we mentioned earlier, maybe, you know, it's got a little bit of corky holes, really pure greens, but at the same time, you know, like some of those iron shots you hit on your back nine to hit it to an inch on four, it's a, 205-yard par three up the hill, you know, and then on seven, it's 180-yard par three, but it's got such a steep vertical change, you know, so it's so hard to control your distance. So, you know, it's not like you're just playing a pitch and putt out there by any stretch. And, if I remember it right, Ren, correct me if I'm wrong, but your first two, your two previous rounds at River Oaks before the 55, because you had mentioned you were trying to break 60, you had shot something along the lines of like 60, 62 or 61, 60, something like that. Like you had two rounds previously that were really close to that 59 mark, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So the Saturday before, like I said, we always had the first tee times on Saturday, and the Saturday before I'd played in the morning round and with my regular group, and I think I shot 700 in that morning group, and I was just playing really good golf at that point, and at that stage in my career I had a sponsor, and he was a member out there as well, and he had some buddies, and he was like, hey, can you come play with us? So I said, all right, I'd come play the first four holes, because obviously the fourth comes back to the clubhouse and I'd leave. And I think I was 3-under through four, and I was like, all right, I'll play to 9 and I'll leave. And I make the turn at 7-under. He's like, oh, you can't leave now. So now I'm through 27 holes that day. I'm like pretty tired. And we get to 10 and didn't want to play the back 9, but I was like, all right, I'll play it. So I get to 10. I was like, I'm just going to drive it here. It's not a driver hole by any means, but I was like, I'm just playing for fun. Let's just get it down there and see how close we can get it. So I hit it down there, short right of the green. I chip in for eagle. So now I'm 9-under through 10. And we get on 11, par 5, which I'd eagled in my 55 round, and I make eagle there. So now I'm 11-under through 11. I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. This is the Saturday before I shot the 55. So I never really been in that low of a position before. And a little bit like that story when I shot the low one with my freshman year. Like, I think the guys were saying, like, Do you understand what you're doing? How many under par you are? Well, I go under par the last 7 holes.
So, oh, no, the unwritten rule got broken again.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I ended up shooting 60 that Saturday, and then obviously the next Saturday I went out and managed to beat that by 5, which is even crazy to think about. So
no doubt. And so how many under is that over a course of, what was that, 2 or 3 rounds there? So that's 16 under for 55, and then that'd be 11 under. So you're 27 under through 2 rounds there.
Yeah, pretty ridiculous.
Hey, completely insane.
Very low rounds. Good stories there from Reen Gibson. We're going to take a quick break, come back on the other side. We're going to have a lot more from Reen, including his journey, you know, through college, up through some of the smaller tours, onto the PGA Tour, and kind of everything that he's accomplished to this point in his career. That's all coming up next. Stay with us on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back to the 73rd hole. Reen Gibson joining us today. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you as always. Glad everyone is with us. All right, Reen, so you get out of college and now you want to take the steps toward becoming a professional golfer. So obviously you've made your way now to the PGA Tour, but as is the case for most guys, it's a long journey. So when you first got out of college, where was the first place that you went to kind of play on some smaller tours as you began to work your way up in the long, long road to the PGA Tour?
I think I started playing some stuff on the NGA Hooters Tour, which was, you know, a really solid mini tour that kind of was in the southeast of America. They came a little Midwest, you know, in the summer, Oklahoma, Texas a little bit, but that's kind of where I started. You know, like I had some success in college, so I thought, you know, why not try it? Like, let's just see. Like, I didn't want to be that guy that, you know, regretted not giving golf a go. So didn't really have any funding, you know, coming out of college. I didn't really have any sponsors or, you know, club contracts or anything like that. So tried to play what I could play and you know, got out on, played the first couple on the Hooters Tour and made the cuts, which, you know, kind of got me going a little bit financially. I could just kind of play week by week, but it wasn't a position where I could play a full schedule like some of the guys were, but it was good to get out there. There were some really good players back then. I mean, you look up some of the leaderboards from, you know, when I 09, 010 when I was playing, and it's, you know, guys that have won major championships, guys that are on the, had stalwarts on the PGA Tour. So really well-run event, managed to get my feet wet and have some success. And, you know, went to Q School for the PGA Tour when it was still for the PGA Tour that year, made it all the way through pre-qualifying and first stage, got the second stage and didn't make it through. So, then played Hooters Tour again, you know, I think that was 10 was my second year, and you know, I started playing state opens and just trying to get experience. I think that's what pro golf is. It's definitely different to college golf. It's way more independent. It's an individual sport. You don't have teammates to fall back on or a college coach booking your flights and hotels and all that stuff. It's all on you. So, that was obviously something I had to figure out and learn pretty quickly on the fly. How to travel, you know, how to be good with time and whatnot. So, went to Q School again in 10, didn't get through. And, you know, I just sat down and kind of looked at what some of my friends back in Australia were doing and they were having success. And, you know, they were kind of in the same kind of player I was as a junior. So saw they were having success up through Asia on some of the tours up there and thought, wow, why not go that way? The money was good. The travel was difficult, obviously living in America, traveling that far, but the money could obviously substitute if you played pretty well over there. So that's the route I went. Felt like that really helped me grow, not only as a player, but as a person, just different cultures, you know, different time zones. Just, it was a massive, massive deal to do it. And my experiences is what really helped me today, and had a lot of success over there, which managed to qualify for the British Open through one of their events, and which got me through the second stage of Q School for 2014, where I got to final stage and finished fourth, which put me on the web.com tour at the time for the 15 season. And, you know, ever since then, I've kind of progressed through, you know, the web to the PGA, back to the web, and now, which is now Korn Ferry, to back on the PGA Tour. So that's kind of the route I went. Everyone's different, and that's just kind of the way I went, that's kind of what's gotten me to where I am today. I think massive learning experiences, which, you know, no one will ever take away from me. I think I'm better for it.
Absolutely. And you mentioned a key tournament in there, the British Open in 2014. And you got to have what I would consider to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You know, you got to you end up making a putt on 18, I believe, on Friday, from the way Coach described it, to make the cut. I believe it was a 15-footer or something like that. And that was able to get into play in the same group with Tiger and Jordan Spieth. And, you know, a couple questions. So, one, what was that like to get to play with Tiger? And, you know, was that a different crowd experience than you ever had before, obviously, with all the people that follow him? And then you mentioned you grew up playing with Jason Day, and Jason had talked about numerous times how much of an influence Tiger was on him and such a role model. So did Tiger have any type of influence like that on you growing up? Was he someone that you looked up to, or did you look up more to kind of the more Australian players like the Greg Normans and some of the other great players from there?
Yeah, so I was probably more definitely on the Greg Norman bandwagon. You know, growing up in Australia, we kind of lived and breathed whatever he was doing. You know, I felt like I suffered defeat like he did whenever he couldn't get it done at the Masters. You know, when Felder got him there that one year and whatnot. So it was more, you know, the influence that I looked up to. But, you know, with a new generation of player, with what Tiger's done to the game, is incredible. And it was an unbelievable experience that day to be able to play with him. You know, it was my first major championship. And yeah, I had to, like you said, and to set up the question, I had to make about a 15 footer on Friday night. It was literally nighttime. It had to be about 8:30. You know, they have long days over there. I was the second last group on that Friday afternoon and had to birdie the last at Royal Liverpool, which was par five, and managed to make a 15 footer. And I knew I had to make it. And I went right in the middle, which set me up, you know, for a Saturday tee time. And thought I was going to be first out with Spieth as a twosome. And I thought, oh, that's fantastic. You know, British Open always goes off the first tee, you know, from early on to late in the afternoon. And you just don't know with weather. I thought I may be able to get out and shoot a couple under and you know, go from the back of the field to maybe midfield or something like that. And for some odd reason, the RNA knew that some bad weather was coming in. So they actually thought they should do threesomes off two tees. So now I went to the last group off of 10 into a threesome, and the name above Spieth on the leaderboard was Woods. So I got my tee time text at about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and I'm like, oh, wow, I don't think I slept that night.
What were your thoughts going through your head when you got that? Yeah, was it nervous? Was it just excitement? You know, kind of what all was going through your mind at that point?
Yeah, I think, obviously, I was excited just to be playing on Saturday. You know, I was super happy and super excited to meet Spieth and play with him. I thought that would be, you know, somewhat of a comfortable pairing. And then I was like, now I've got Woods. So I was definitely excited, but I was definitely like, oh man, is this really going to have to happen? Like, because obviously it's kind of a circus playing with him, with the amount of people around and people yelling and whatnot. But, you know, it was a cool experience. I wasn't playing my best golf, you know, that week. I managed to make the cut, kind of scraped it around. I putted fantastic that week just to make the cut. And, but of the four rounds, I probably played my best golf, you know, with Tiger and Spieth. I think I shot two over that day, and I think I was a couple over early, so I kind of managed to right the ship. But, you know, they were fantastic to play with, you know, treating me just like any other pro. Like, I think, you know, we're all inside the ropes trying to do the same thing, play good golf, you know, try to win the tournament or whatnot. So they treated me just like another pro, and, you know, I think they knew from the get-go it was pretty easy going, and I didn't really get in their way, and we chatted up, I thought, more than probably what I thought we would have. And, you know, even to this day, I haven't run across Tiger much because we don't necessarily play the same schedule. But, you know, I've seen Jordan quite a bit. He comes down to Australia and plays, and his caddy, Michael. And, you know, they remember my name, and we always say hi and pretty cordial towards each other. So it was just a cool experience and one I'll never take for granted. Yeah, it's pretty cool to say I got to play with Tiger, that's for sure.
Yeah, now playing with Tiger, was it as much of a circus as you thought it was going to be? Was it crazy?
It was. We're obviously at the back of the field, but and the 10th tee, you know, most of those courses in England or Scotland, you know, the 9 goes out, 9 comes back. The 9 doesn't necessarily come back to the clubhouse. So we had the shuttle bus out to the 10th, and when we got out to 10, there was already, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people waiting. You know, just they didn't really care because the leaders were off at the same time, off of 1, and all these guys are out here watching us on 10. So, you know, rolling up to that was a little surreal. And then, you know, it was just, like I said, it's not bad playing with him. It's just what comes with him. So if he putts out first and you still have to tap in, you know, the crowd's already moving. So it's just little stuff like that. Once he hits this shot, the crowd's gone. So if you've got to hit off next or putt in next, it's a little difficult in that way. I've never really experienced that before. I've never really played an event of that stature and that big a crowd. So that's really, I think, the biggest deal with it. It's just, you know, the people, and they're just there to see him, you know, and it's just the way it is.
Yeah, I remember listening to Phil talk about it one time, what it was like to play with Tiger, and he mentioned the exact same thing that you did there, where it was, you know, if Tiger finishes out before you do, you know, you're going to have a tough time because there's people walking all over the place, you know, a lot of distractions, that kind of thing. So he had the prepper, you know, he would say, you know, try to finish out even if you have a 3 or 4 footer, you know, just mark and say, I'll finish, you know, that he had that type of mindset. So, you know, it was good, you know, kind of learn that experience, you know, of, you know, those are exterior things, you know, that you don't really think about at the time, you know, but then, you know, you see it and you're like, man, with all these people here, you know, and those couple footsteps, you know, I mean, it can, especially when you're over, you know, a bumpy 4 footer with a little bit of break, you know, it can add a little bit of intimidation.
Oh yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, after a couple of holes, I kind of noticed what Spieth was doing and how he was handling it. He was doing exactly what he just said. If he had, you know, 2 feet or 3 feet, he's like, I'll just go ahead and finish, just to make sure he could finish the hole before Tiger and the crowds got moving. So it was cool to see how other players react to it as well.
Yeah, so that was a little bit earlier in your career. So take us through whenever you first got your PGA Tour card, just kind of the emotions that came with that, because obviously that was the goal. So now you've achieved it. You've got your Tour card. What did that feel like?
Yeah, it was, I mean, what an awesome feeling. You know, it's what you worked for your whole life. I had a decent season. My rookie season on theweb.com was 2015. And my first event was down in Panama and had a very, very poor first round. I think I shot 4 or 5 over that first round. I remember this vividly because I'm playing with a good, at the time I was playing with Harold Varner, who's turned into a good friend of mine. And I think he'd been out there for a year or two before me, and went out the next day. I think I shot 6 under and just did it easy and made the cut. And, you know, I finished sixth that week and made like 20 grand. And that was a huge week for me. It just really, you know, validated that I felt I belonged out there, and took a lot of pressure off with regards to the reshuffle and member status, you know, moving forward for that year. I knew I was going to have access to every event after that 1 week. And I think that just, like I said, gave me the confidence that I felt I belonged out there and had a good rookie year. And I think I finished, I'd have to go back and look. I think I finished like about 30th that year on the money list, and top 25 progressed and went into the finals. At that time it was 4 events. It's now down to 3, but the web.com finals, which is now Korn Ferry finals. And had a good mindset. You know, rookie year, my first goal was to make sure I could, you know, keep full playing status for the following year, which obviously I did by finishing the top 75. And then, yeah, like I said, went into the 4 finals events with a good mindset. I kind of had nothing to lose. Like I said, look, let's just go out and play some good golf. You know you can. And, you know, 1 good week, 2 decent weeks, 3 average weeks, you can get a PGA Tour card. And, you know, I missed the cut the first week up in Indiana, and I was a little bummed out. But, you know, I knew I was playing good golf. And then, you know, next 3 weeks, I think I finished 20th, 10th, and 4th, and ended up, you know, getting like the 8th card out of the playoffs, and which gave me my first PGA Tour card. So it was very rewarding. It was a long year, and you know, I was super excited for what was to come. And you know, looking back on it, maybe an extra year on the web at that point may have been better. Who knows? But yeah, I went out, had my rookie year on the PGA Tour in 16, and I was kind of definitely thrown to the wolves a little bit. You know, your rookie year out there, it's just crazy. There's no other tour like it. So many distractions and whatnot, and having to learn all new courses again, and, you know, just with the spotlight on you all the time. And didn't have my best year in 16 and ended up back on the web for 17. So, you know, I learned a lot that first year, and I knew I'd be better for it once I kind of got back out there. And definitely this year in 2020 has been a lot easier. You know what to expect, know how to travel, know where the driving range is, where the player dining is, all that stuff. Just little stuff like that you take for granted sometimes. And so, yeah, feel more comfortable, and the results are obviously a little better this year than what they were in my rookie year.
Yeah, you mentioned comfortability there, Ryan. I think that's a big thing, and I think that's, you know, like you said, you had the experience, you know, and that gave you the knowledge, you know, to go forward for there. And, you know, I'm just curious, you know, from, like, you know, we played numerous rounds together, and I got to thinking about it, you know, I don't remember a time ever seeing you chip. You know, it seemed like you were just, you know, hitting it to 5 or 10 feet almost every shot. So, you know, what in your game has changed, you know, over the course of, you know, since you came to America, you know, even back then, to where you are now? You know, what are some of the things that you've worked on. And, you know, we've had a lot of outreach from a lot of the really good junior players around, especially in the state, you know, who love the show and, you know, love the knowledge that we give out there. So what are some things that you would like to share with them, you know, either people that are in the college process now or, you know, looking at schools, you know, trying to work on their game? What are some advice that you would give to them to be able to get to the stage to where like you are now?
Well, first of all, you know, I've had a lot of people and kids in high school also reach out to me and their parents and just kind of want some feedback from my point of view. And, you know, being an outsider, being from Australia and obviously not growing up in the high school system over here, I really think, and I think it's starting to change now, but I see there's a big, you know, stigmatism towards having to play Division One golf at a big school. And, you know, I went to NAI, I went to Oklahoma Christian NAI school. We had 2,200 kids. There's a lot of players on the PGA Tour that did not play Division One. They played D2. Some may have even played D3. But for me, when people ask me, you know, moving forward, it's all about experience. And you want to go to a program to where you can play every single event. It's not, you know, it's not fun to sit home when you see your five buddies on the road traveling and having fun and going to cool places and, you know, winning tournaments or, you know, just getting that full golf college experience. And I think, you know, I'd rather go to a school where I was, you know, obviously in the top five than, you know, being a six bag or an eight bag. You know, I wanted to play every event. That's how you get better. You know, that's how you learn to travel. You know, you learn how to play on the road, you know, different environments, different grasses, you know, different climates, all that stuff. So I've always said, go somewhere where you can play. It's not fun sitting at home, you know. And then just get out there and play as much as you can. Get out there and, you know, put yourself in difficult situations, you know, play as many competition rounds as you can. Go play AJGA, whatever is locally, the Oklahoma State Junior Golf Association stuff. Go play that. I just think playing, getting reps, you know, you're going to learn more about your game, especially under pressure, under the pump. And I think that's how you're going to get better. And, you know, hopefully, you know, you're working towards, you know, a goal of trying to play college golf. And, you know, that's probably the best thing that's how I can say it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff there, Reen. I want to remind everyone, as storm season approaches in Oklahoma, you need to have McRae Roofing on your radar. Their commitment to craft is what defines McRae Roofing and Exteriors. McRae Roofing is a locally owned and operated roofing service company that is passionate about the quality of their roof creations. Jeff McRae, owner of McRae Roofing, views your roof like a canvas. His team's sole purpose is to create you a masterpiece of a roof, which brings out the beauty of your home and its surroundings, a beauty that will last for years to come. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000 or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. Reen Gibson joining us here on the 73rd hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you as always. Reen, one thing I want to hear about is the albatross that you made here a little while back. I believe it was at a charity event. It was the 18th hole and you won a lot of money for your charity. Take us through that, because that had to have been a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, so this is the first year I played on tour. This was 2016, and it was the tour event in Reno. It was called the Barracuda Championship, and it's the point or the Stableford system, you know, where two for a birdie, I think it's five for an eagle, eight for an albatross, and playing pretty good there. I think I was somewhat towards the lead after two rounds, and third round, can't really remember, didn't play great, but I was probably running, you know, middle of the pack. And Sunday was a bit of a test. I wasn't making any birdies, so I wasn't really making any positive points. And I think for the day, I think I was like maybe minus 5 points for the day. And I get to 18 and, you know, reachable par five. We're playing at a bunch of altitude there. And I was like, I'm just going to hit driver here and hit an awesome tee shot, drew it over the corner, over the trees, and the ball went forever. And, I remember this, had 170 yards in, but with altitude and the downhill, I hit a wedge and pin was in the front and landed the ball in on the front, trickled in like a putt, and obviously made 8 points for that. So I went from minus five that day to plus three, and being the Stableford system that it was, I think I went from like 50th to 25th in one shot. So obviously that was worth a bunch of FedEx Cup points and a nice little bonus to the check I made that week. So, but yeah, unbeknown to me was there for that week, anyone that made an albatross on the 18th hole would get $100,000 to charity. And, you know, the officials came up to me afterwards and explained that to me, and yeah, it was a pretty cool situation. So, $50,000 of that went to the tournament charity that week. I can't remember who Barracuda had for it that week. And then I got to allocate $50,000 to a charity of my choice. And a good friend of mine actually won that week, Greg Chalmers, another Aussie who lives down in Dallas. And that was his first win. And, you know, at that point, I didn't really know, you know, what to do with the 50. So I kind of had some friends reach out, and another Aussie friend reached out, Cameron Percy, and mentioned Greg. And at that point, I actually already made my mind up to give it to Greg, because he has a son with autism, and Greg has a charity down there in Dallas called Maximum Chances. And his son Max is, I think he's probably about 15 now, and he's kind of gone through the whole autism stuff. And we had some autism close to our family here in Oklahoma, and was able to donate the $50,000 to him. And you know, he called me immediately once he heard that, and I think he was almost more excited I donated the money to him than him actually winning his first tour event. So glad I could really help those guys out.
That's a fabulous story there, Ryan. And we had Taylor Gooch's caddy, Mal Baker, on a couple weeks ago, and he caddied for Greg Chalmers for a couple of years, and just talked about how amazing of a guy that he is. And, you know, so it's great that you're able to share that good experience with him, Ryan. And one of the stories that Coach Lynn had sent over to me that I wanted to ask with you, you said that year, you believe, was 2016, and sent me over a thing that you finished runner-up in a web.com event to Steven Yeager, who shot the web.com record, and you shot, from what I'm reading here, you shot 62 twice in the same event, but you were using different putters.
So I'm a little weird when it comes to putters. I don't mind changing up looks, you know, even during a tournament week. So I remember this vividly. We're playing the event out in Stonebray, which is TPC Stonebray, which is kind of like the East Bay of San Francisco, Oakland area. And I shot 24 under that week. And I lost by 6 shots to Steven Yeager.
Oh, my. Holy moly.
Yeah. So he passed 70, too, as well. Passed 70. And he shot 58 the first round. He shot 12 under, which I think is the web.com record. And, you know, I shot 8 under the first round. And I think I was bogey-free 8 under. And I was behind by 4. When I pulled up the leaderboard, I was like, "What is this? This has got to be wrong." And obviously it wasn't. And then, so, yeah, used the putter. I think it was a new putter I got that week. I think it was an Otis 2 ball. I was using it. I picked up literally that Monday or Tuesday of that week and put it in play. And then come Sunday, I just wasn't feeling it. So I went back to my old Odyssey number 7 and managed to shoot 8 under again on Sunday. And, you know, at that point, you know, the back nine on Sunday, where Steven was so far ahead of us that, you know, there was a really good kind of battle going on for second place. I think it was myself, Xander Schauffele, Brendan Hagee, who are obviously both now on the PGA Tour as well, and I think one or two other players, and you know, managed to get some birdies coming in late and locked up second place outright. So, like I said, not afraid to change up looks with regards to putting, and used 2 different putters that week.
You mentioned Brandon Hagee. I played with Brandon Hagee, and Colby actually caddied for me, and I've never seen anyone hit the ball further in my life. So
it's disgusting. It's disgusting how far he hits it. For a guy that weighs 150 pounds, he bombs it.
We were out at Oak Tree National. I can't remember what the hole is. Big, long par
16,
five. 16. Yeah, 16 over at National. And Brandon Hagee hit – they both hit driver. Taylor and Brandon Hagee did. And Taylor hits the ball a pretty good way. He's not a bomber, but hits it a ways. And we had the laser – Brandon Hagee, because we want to see how far in front of us he was.
He was 80 yards ahead of me. Yeah, so anyone who's played Oak Tree National, Ryan, obviously you're playing out there now. So, you know, where the creek bends at a, you know, 45 or 40-degree angle or whatever, he had to be so far left of the creek that he was, you know, parallel with wherever the cart path is or wherever the creek ends up there. I mean, he had to have more than a pitching wedge into this hole. I mean, it was insane.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, that's a poor club choice because there's just nowhere for him to hit it up there. You know, it narrows him so much.
It's so narrow, so narrow.
Yeah, yeah. But no, he bombs it. He moves it, I tell you. He's pound for pound, he's the longest for sure.
No doubt, no doubt. And a couple questions before we get out of here, Ryan. One, you mentioned you're playing out at Oak Tree, and you know, we had Sam Humphries on a couple two weeks ago now, and he mentioned you know, some of the money games that they've been able to get to out there with some of the guys that are still able to play like yourself. You know, so have you been able to get in, you know, any of those, or been able to play with any other really great players out there? And then, you know, once everything's able to get back up and running, you know, you kind of mentioned you had low expectations, you know, because you want to be excited for everything. You know, so what are kind of some of your goals going forward once you're able to get back into action?
So with regards to the first question there, it's been good. Pretty much everyone's home right now. You know, with the ties between, with Oak Tree being so close to OSU and OU and a bunch of their players just turning pro, you know, Victor Hovland, Matt Wolf, I think Garrett from OU just joined as well. So yeah, it's been a good group of guys out there, and there's games pretty much every day. And you know, there's, on average, there's got to be 15-20 pros floating around every day, so it's kind of nice. Everyone's somewhat on the same schedule you know, right now, because nothing's going on during season. It's pretty far-fetched, you know, if the Champions Tour is playing, or the Web or the Corn Ferry is playing, or you know, we're playing on the PGA Tour, there's really no one. So it's definitely a different environment. It almost feels like a, you know, winter time in a Scottsdale or a Jupiter when all the pros are home. So it's been cool to see everyone out there, and you know, very fortunate that the owner Everett Dobson out at Oak Tree takes, you know, loves having us out there, and you know, the members love having us as well, and it's been really cool. So yeah, I've played with them a few times. It's just whoever's around, we just get out and play and whatnot. So and then yeah, with regards to getting back out on the tour, it'll be interesting. Not sure. They want us to play by June. You know, I'm still 50-50 on that, just kind of with what I look at it. But it's going to be weird, because I think, you know, with them, you know, shrinking the schedule a little bit to finish FedEx Cup by end of August, it's pretty much going to be an event every week. And it would be interesting to see if I can actually get into some of these events. I think with no one having played since Thursday, the players, I think everyone's going to be itching to play. And, you know, there's, say the first week in Colonial, there's only 144 spots. So it's probably going to force, you know, some of the lower guys like us out, because if everyone wants to play, you know, there's more than 144 guys with status. So I don't actually get direct access to that event. So I'm just going to have to see where my number falls and hope I get in. So, you know, I just got to, you know, bide my time. And when I get a call up to play, just be ready.
Absolutely. Ryan, you've been absolutely phenomenal. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. Hopefully when the season gets underway, you're able to get into quite a few events and make a run at this thing and have some success on the PGA Tour. So thank you for all your time. You've been phenomenal. Great stories, and we hope to have you on again sometime.
No, thanks, Colby, and thanks, Taylor. I appreciate having you on.
Really appreciate it, my friend. Yeah, a lot of great insight from there. And like I said, best of luck to you whenever you're able to get back out there in action.
Yeah, I love it. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks, Reen. That was Reen Gibson joining us here on the 73rd hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you as always. Great stuff there from Reen. We wish him nothing but the best moving forward on the PGA Tour. Hopefully he will have a lot of success when they get back up and going. So thanks everyone for listening. Once again, reminder, go check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the 73rd hole. Also check out our partners from the stadium, fromthestadium.com. It was From the Back Tees. Now it's merged with From the Stadium. We're happy to be partnered with those guys. So check them out as well, and let us know what you think about the podcast. Rate it, subscribe it, hit us up on social media. We certainly appreciate everyone listening, and we hope that everyone has a great day, has a great week. We're back later in the week with another great interview, so more great things to come as we head back toward a return to golf. So thanks again to Ryan, and thanks everyone for joining us for another edition of the 73rd Hole.